Hi, my name is Dawn Archer, and this is a brief piece from my book Trekker Girl Morocco Bound, which is about a trek I did in the Sahara Desert to raise funds for Thrombosis UK. My book describes my blood clot journey and then goes into the trek itself. This is how it starts. I asked myself, not for the first time, what was I doing? How had I ended up in the Sahara Desert, slumped wearily in a dusty camping chair? Collapsed right alongside me, Sarah, my childhood friend and lucky travelling companion, looked every one of her 52 years. Goodness knows I wasn't any better. Our bodies were feeling the pressure. I surely hadn't expected this. Boots held together with gaffer tape, painkillers at the ready, and every move a triumph of determination. Soaked in sweat, with sand stuck to the layers of high-strength suntan lotion, I felt unbearably itchy and very smelly. I had been determinedly using two walking poles to push myself through the ever-shifting sands, taking great care not to jar my already ravaged back. Having suffered potentially fatal blood clots at a relatively young age, I was trekking to raise funds for the charity Thrombosis UK. Anyone who has survived them will realise I already had enough to deal with. Losing my precious sun hat was the straw that broke the camel's back. It was no joke. This was essential protection against the murderous power of the sun. The intense Sahara heat, dehydration, and prolonged activity were a dangerous and possibly deadly combination for me. With my fair skin, and despite thick hanks of blonde hair, it left me unprotected against the harsh and unforgiving elements. How had I got myself into this predicament? 30 years ago, the pain, sharp and fierce in my chest, woke me up with a start. As I fought to think straight, I had no notion of how this moment was about to change my life forever. I had suffered a deep vein thrombosis and a pulmonary embolism, blood clots in my leg and lung. Still today, my heart races as the memories come flooding back. I feel a cold sweat creeping across my body as I remember the intense pain sharpening with each breath I took. I now realise how close I came to death, a shocking realisation at any age, but particularly at a relatively young 26. DVT is often thought of as related to long flights and periods of inactivity. It may be obvious from swelling, redness, and pain in the leg. However, they often show no symptoms at all. These blood clots can and do kill. A piece of mine had broken off and traveled into my lung, causing the sharp and shockingly debilitating pain in the back of my chest. The first visit to my local doctor turned out to be pointless. She took blood tests, but there was no action to investigate or alleviate my suffering. She seemed to completely underestimate the agony I was in. It was hard for me to describe and proved impossible for her to locate. Each breath I took caused a sharp stab inside my chest, as if someone was sticking a knife through my back. It didn't respond to external pressure, and the doctor didn't recognize my symptoms. Sadly, this is often true even today. And then I'd like to just read a short piece about a particularly amusing incident from when we were actually on the trek. Peering blearily through tired eyes, the luminous dial on my watch showed 5:30. Not too early for me to be up and about. The early hour gave me time to wake up slowly and prepare for the rigours of what promised to be our longest and most challenging day so far. I was glad to get out of my sleeping bag. Although the bedrolls were quite thick, I could still feel the lumpy ground beneath and my whole body ached. Aware that my companions were still asleep, I eased myself stiffly upright. My back felt like a board and the rest of my body like a rag. Although there was still some residual numbness, I was manifestly relieved that the intense shooting pains in my thigh hadn't returned, thanks to my painkillers. In the pitch blackness, the chilly air felt like a wet flannel against my skin as once again I faced the horrors of the toilet tent. With my torch held firmly between my teeth, I can't imagine what I must have looked like as I tried not to bring the flimsy structure down around my ears, holding onto the metal poles to hold myself upright. It was a close-run thing and I couldn't resist a rueful chuckle. Even the pungent smell of our temporary toilet pit didn't spoil my rare moment of humour. All sound travels long distances in the empty air, as there is nothing else to compete with. No cars, planes, barking dogs or machinery, just complete stillness and quiet. I could hear everything for miles around, and it was magic. Soon enough, this serene start to the day was shattered by the cacophony of noise from awakening desert dwellers. Coughs, spits and sniffs, human and animal alike. I could hear Chuckles the cook doing her thing as her giggles floated in the still morning air, and realised our cooks were already busy from the clatter of pots and pans echoing around camp. It was good to hear, and I relaxed a little as porters started to move around. It wasn't long before everyone unzipped themselves from snug sleeping bags to get ready for our 7:30 departure. Daylight came gradually, the sky lightening through shades of orange until the sun's rays started to blaze above the horizon, heralding swiftly rising temperatures. With my bags already packed before breakfast, I took my time over pancakes smothered in jam and much needed tea, while chewing over the previous day's events with some of our companions. It was such a relief to discover that I was not the only one with health concerns, as several of the others admitted to feeling less than fully fit, battling various aches and pains. However, I still kept the woeful state of my back to myself. We were pushing ourselves beyond our normal limits, and something had to give. Some of my companions had blisters on blisters, and I really felt for them. The only way to reduce the discomfort was to lance and drain them, then strap the foot securely. The snaking queue outside the Naya's tent grew longer as our bodies began to suffer. Many were doing the Moroccan Mambo, our very own version of Deli Belly, so anti-diarrhea pills were in great demand. I was glad I didn't have either problem, not yet anyway. Regardless, spirits were high as the boss and Bibi tried to chivvy us out of camp for an early start and our longest day of walking. "Come on, everybody, only half an hour left," Bibi called. This was immediately followed by moans and groans of complaint from all directions. "It's all very well," I muttered to myself. "What's the matter, bossy one?" asked Sarah, looking up from her repacking. "Oh, nothing really, I suppose," I replied wearily. Training all day on a Sunday was tiring enough. I just wasn't prepared for feeling so exhausted first thing in the morning. "I know what you mean," butted in Steve, overhearing my grumbling. "You usually have a week to recover, but getting up and doing it all again day after day is really tough. It's much harder than I expected. I don't know about you guys, but I'm already worn out." That was quite an admission from one of our hardiest trekkers, who was always at the front of the group and rarely complained. Though we were tired and suffering from all manner of ailments, there was no question of any of us not continuing, but it was going to be a very long day. We had camped in an area of flat, hard-packed sand with a dune curving around behind us. We only had a few steps to go before we were into a huge field of the infernal things. "Thank goodness these are only low ones," mumbled Sarah, plodding over the small ridges of windblown sand. "It's a pity we can't skirt around them," I said, feeling a bit ashamed at the thought. "Mind you, it would spoil all the fun, wouldn't it?" I continued sarcastically. My mate just rolled her eyes and laughed ruefully. We both loved the dunes, but they did test our reserves of energy and resolve. Luckily, this particular morning, they were not too challenging. Perhaps we were finally getting the hang of them. As they petered out, we came across an abandoned Berber village with mud-brick buildings crumbling back into the desert sand. While poking around some of the derelict houses, my imagination was running riot. I could almost hear the laughter of children playing as their mothers, swaddled in layers of blue cotton, leaned against doorframes chatting to their friends. Keeping one eye on their families, eyes sparkling, their giggles would erupt as they exchanged the latest village gossip. Perhaps the sun was beginning to get to me. Our chatter left the echoing silence untouched. If those walls could only talk, we would have had a living history lesson. It was good to have time to indulge in such visions, but practical matters took over during our early lunch break. Realising the ruins gave some privacy, once we'd finished eating, Sarah and I wandered off for the essential comfort stop. Being girls, we always went in pairs. There we were, chatting about the day so far, exchanging snippets of news gleaned from our fellow trekkers, when the very worst possible thing happened to me. I was squatting awkwardly when I felt a sharp dart of pain and my back locked up completely. Finding it impossible to lever myself upright, I completely lost my balance and rolled forward into the soft sand. "Oh no, help," I yelled, knickers around my ankles, all semblance of dignity gone. Sarah burst out laughing with no thought for my composure. I couldn't blame her really, as I must have made quite a sight with my ankles tangled in clothing, toilet paper in one hand, bump firmly in the air. "Oh my giddy aunt," she gasped, absolutely beside herself. "That's hilarious. Are you okay?" she finally managed to get out amidst the giggles. "Do I bloody look okay?" I snapped, obviously not seeing the funny side of things. However, catching sight of my mate, wiping away tears and trying not to snigger, I suddenly saw myself through her eyes and burst into fits of laughter as well, as I lay there completely immobilised in the sand, which was rapidly working its way into my important little places. "Now, where's my camera when I need it?" "Ooh, don't you dare. Give me a hand up, you daft cow, before someone sees me." Looking up, my loss of dignity was complete. Some of the crew had stopped loading gear onto the truck and stood chuckling and pointing in my direction. Totally humiliated, I tried to amble nonchalantly back, painfully aware of the stifled laughter of the rest of the group. I think most people had a good laugh at my expense, although it was a while before I could relax enough to have a giggle with them.